Good morning. I will be reading from James 2, 14 through 26. What good is it, dear brothers and sisters, if you say you have faith but don't show it by your actions? Can that kind of faith save anyone? Suppose you see a brother or sister who has no food or clothing, and you say, goodbye and have a good day. Stay warm and eat well. But then you don't give that person any food or clothing. What good does that do? So you see, faith by itself isn't enough. Unless it produces good deeds, it is dead and useless. Now someone may argue, some people have faith, others have good deeds. But I say, how can you show me your faith if you don't have good deeds? I will show you my faith by my good deeds. You say you have faith, for you believe that there is one God. Good for you. Even the demons believe this, and they tremble in terror. How foolish! Can't you see that faith without good deeds is useless? Don't you remember that our ancestor Abraham was shown to be right with God by his actions when he offered his son Isaac on the altar? You see, his faith and actions worked together. His actions made his faith complete. And so it happened, just as the scriptures say, Abraham believed God, and God counted him as righteous because of his faith. He was even called the friend of God. So you see, we are shown to be right with God by what we do, not by faith alone. Rahab the prostitute is another example. She was shown to be right with God by her actions when she hid those messengers and sent them safely away by a different road. Just as the body is dead without breath, so also faith is dead without good works.
Thank you, Chris. How are we doing this morning? Good? Well, I watched two football games yesterday. One of them was fun to watch for part. The other one, if you didn't watch the second half, you really didn't miss anything because nobody scored. So if you fell asleep during the OSU game, nothing happened in the second half. Literally, nothing happened. And so I can say that. My wife's an OSU fan. She's probably sitting over there shaking her head, but she fell asleep during the second half. So, no. So we had a late night because we had our Justice Now this weekend. And so Friday night, we had our youth come, and we started. If you don't know what our Justice Now is, it's kind of like if you've ever heard of a Disciple Now. It's just a weekend thing. We come up, and our youth stay the night. So it's kind of like we have some different sessions and things that we talk about, as well as I'm realizing I'm a lot louder than Todd, apparently. Can you bring that down just a little bit, Jules? I feel like I'm ringing just a little bit. There we go. Is that better? I'm not ringing now. Okay, sorry. But what we do is we take a topic and we talk about some different things, and it's something that we've been doing for quite a few years. We unfortunately didn't get to do it last year, but this year it was nice to have our youth back together, and we took some time talking about our, you probably saw Rusty's shirt, that's the shirt we did, Live Justly, and we talked about some groups of people that tend to be overlooked, and as Christians, as followers of Jesus, we should be a part of trying to help live justly in the sense of being like what we talked about with our children earlier, being there to help. What do we need? What do we need to participate, and what can we do? And our youth had great input, great interaction. It was also nice on Saturday morning we got to have a video chat with our buddy Noe down in Guatemala. Some of you remember Noe, who was here for a couple months or so with staying with Rusty Melinda. He's now got a four-year-old. His daughter is four now, and he's got one on the way. They don't know whether it's a boy or girl just yet, but due in, I believe, December is what I think he said. But also be praying for them. The virus is really bad in Guatemala, like it is in a lot of Central America and South American countries right now. And so it's been really rough. It's hindered a lot of their ministry work just because of what they've had to go through. But it was really good to talk with him and some of the cool things that he's doing in Guatemala and working with some education things, and it's really neat. And so if you have any questions about that, I'd love to talk to you about what we did this weekend, or you can ask one of our youth. They would love to, well, I'm assuming they would love to share everything with you. No, I think they would. And so we had a great weekend. Again, thank you as a church being allowing us to have a the space to do that and supporting our youth so that they can have those opportunities. You'll probably get to hear a little bit more about our Guatemala stuff in the weeks to come. It's something that our youth are wanting to take on as an active thing to do. And so we're going to be talking about that on Sunday nights and things like that. So that's just a quick overview. But we had a good weekend, or at least I had a good weekend. But, you know, when you have a bunch of teenagers and you're almost lock-in style at the church, you don't go to bed till super late, or you sleep on a couch. And I'm learning that that's harder and harder for me to do. But it was a great weekend, and I think they all had a good time, and we had a good time. But most importantly, I think we were all challenged in great ways, so that's good. But wanted to give you a little overview of all of that, what's been going on over the last weekend. So we have a lot of great teenagers, by the way. If you haven't got to meet some of them, take your time to meet them. They're pretty awesome. And so you continue to pray for them and stick with them, and they'll challenge you. I promise they will, in good ways, not like the mean ways, the good ways. Let's pray. God, we are challenged by this passage in James, maybe in a way that we sometimes don't really think about, or maybe in a way that constantly is a reminder of combining the head with actions. So God, as we look at this passage, as we are challenged by it, help us to be challenged in not just thinking in the right way, but living in the right way. Pray these things in your Son's name. Amen. I don't know about you, but about 3 times a day, I get a robocall. You know the robocalls? So like, no joke, I kept track of it this week because I was thinking about it. But like this day, there was one day I had like 6 telemarketer robo type calls. One day I only had like a couple of them, but mostly on average, anywhere from 3, right around 3 robocalls a day. Anybody else get those? Okay? And it doesn't matter how many times I sign up for the do not call list, like I still get them. Somehow they skirt through the legal system. And so I remember when used to you get a robocall, it's always from like an 800 number or an 866 number or some random number, things like that. But then they started like a few years ago using local numbers. How tricky of them, okay? And they started using the local numbers. And so, you know, if I see a local number, a 405 number or whatever, or now whatever the new area code is, I don't even remember what it is, but anyway, or definitely if it's a 381 or a 392 prefix for around this area, yeah, I answer it. Who knows, might be calling somebody from the church or somebody else or something like that. I'd answer it. And they were tricky. But, you know, you get that answer and you answer the phone and you're like, hello. And they're like, your car's extended warranty is up and blah, blah, blah. Or would you like to donate to this thing? Or do you, like one that I've been getting lately now is, do you have land for sale? But the most absurd one that happened this week, and I forgot to tell even my wife this, but it came up this week, and I got a phone call, and it was one of those robocalls, and sometimes I just answer it because, you know, if it doesn't say scam on it, sometimes you're like, well, it might be somebody I need to talk to. It's not that hard to answer and then hit hang up or whatever, but it was the most hilarious one I've gotten so far. I got a call, I'm 36, by the way, from AARP. And I almost, for a moment, was like, I might play this up for a minute and have a little fun. But it was super funny. They call me. I said, this is AARP. We're calling about some benefits you could have with Medicare, blah, 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 and all this kind of stuff and everything. And I'm sitting there laughing. And I'm like, you have no idea who I am at all. You don't have a clue where I came from because you know I don't qualify for any of this stuff. And so I started to, you know, I know I'm getting a few more gray hairs, but I'm still 36. And so, like, you know, all these different things. And I go through the questions and I look at it. And I answer, and then she says her whole spiel, and she goes, how old are you? And I go, well, I'm 36. She goes, and she paused. I don't know how to respond to this. Well, do you know anyone? That's like, she was well-trained and really good. But I remember sitting there thinking like, wow, it really is just random phone calls that you get. And I thought about that, and I thought about this passage from James. And I thought about the line where James talks about, go in peace, stay warm, have a nice meal. When we say that instead of offering that to someone else. You know, for the longest time we talked about, one of the things we talked about this weekend with in reference to Guatemala is there has been an issue over the years with short-term mission trips where groups that have gone in tend to sometimes cause more harm than good because they go in with their agenda rather than understanding the people that they're going to minister to. It happens in our world a lot. We make assumptions about groups of people or situations, and a lot of times the problem that has happened, especially in short-term mission trips, is that we go in expecting this group of people to adopt our way, our culture, and the way we think, rather than take the time to get to know where they come from, their understanding, their life experience. My AARP call, obviously, she didn't do a whole lot of research on me. She didn't know my background. Same thing goes on in our world, not just in short-term mission trips, but we oftentimes make major assumptions about people without ever having the opportunity or taking the opportunity to get to know where they're coming from. It happens so often. We're automatically quick to offer an opinion, a judgment, a solution to their problem without ever actually knowing what's going on in their lives, what issues they're dealing with, what's going on in their family situation, what's going in their economic situation, what's going on in you fill in the blank. We don't take the time a lot of times. We just assume and we go in there as saviors to try and fix the problem. Guys, we're really bad about that. Can we be honest, fellas? Like, we like to fix things. I love to fix things, and I'm just going to go in and stuff. And so, like, when it comes to me, you know, the microwave broke during a little over a year ago at our house. And so I'm sitting there thinking, like, I could just go replace it, or I could figure out what's wrong with it. And so I learned it from my father that I take things apart before I actually figure out what I'm doing. And so I started to, like, take it apart and figure out how to put, like, figure out what the problem was, and I got it all apart. And I can see Kaylee just like in the other side of the room looking at me like, do you know what you're doing? Do you really know what you're doing? And I get to the point where like I can't obviously figure out what it is. I know nothing about microwaves, okay? I don't know how they work. I don't even know, like everybody talks about how they have send off radiation. I don't know. Like I put my food in there, I heat it up, and I hope it works, right? And so I take it all apart, and then I realize I don't have a clue what I'm doing. So next thing I go to, yes, good old YouTube. Go to YouTube. You can find how to fix anything on there, just about anything. Problem is you can find about 15 different people talking about the same thing, all doing it in different ways. And so I get on there, and I'm trying to do my research and all the different things, and I'm like, oh, okay, I could do this, find that switch, and I'm figuring all that kind of stuff. I watch all the videos, and I try and figure it out. And so I'm like, well, I think it might be this. And I did a little bit of research. I got my voltmeter out, and I'm checking this switch and all those kinds of things. I'm like, well, it might be that. I'm not really sure. And I'm like, well, it's got to be one of these things. So I do the next best thing. I'm just going to go buy something and put it in there and see if it fixes it, right? So it's the mechanic way of doing things. Anyway, and so like the whole idea is that you just like, oh, I'm going to fix this part, so I'm going to go get that part, and then I'm going to put it in there. So I found a place in Oklahoma City to fix my microwave. And so, oh, well, not, they didn't fix it. They had the part that I needed. And so I go and I pick up this part. It's a little switch or whatever. And I bring it back to the house. And I put it all together, and I put the switch in there, and by golly, it worked. And it's like that wonderful moment, that wonderful feeling, like, I accomplished something, okay? I fixed it. It broke 6 months later, and I had to do it all over again with another switch. So now I'm a microwave expert. No, I'm not. And so if your microwave breaks, don't call me. But like that simple accomplishment of I fixed something, sometimes we strive to get the quick solution, the quick fix for something, rather than figure out what's going on in the journey with someone else. We do. We don't really think about the depth of what's going on. People are not microwaves. They're not. They're not just little parts that we can fix and throw in there and it fixes the problem. Groups of people are not microwaves. People are not microwaves. And so when we look at this passage with James, it seems like what's going on with the group of people that he is writing to is this idea that as long as they have the right thoughts, right beliefs, the right answers, and all those kinds of things, that they've got it figured out and they're doing what they're supposed to be doing. As long as I've got it all figured out and I've got the right answers, I got the right stuff, the information, those kinds of things, I can help. I can fix it. And then the simple question comes. Imagine a brother or sister who is naked and never has enough food to eat. What if one of you said, "Go in peace, stay warm, have a nice meal"? Words didn't help that situation at all, did it? Having the right answer didn't help that situation at all. Having the right belief didn't fix that at all. But rather, James challenges us, faith is dead when it doesn't result in faithful activity. Verse 17, faith is dead when it doesn't result in faithful activity. Now, as Baptists, we wrestle with this passage here. And like Martin Luther, when he read this passage and he read this book of James, if we really focus, most of the time when we think of James, the book of James, if you've ever studied it, if you've ever looked at it, you think about this passage and we talk about faith and deeds. Faith without deeds is dead. And we've heard that over and over again maybe in your life from whenever you first heard the passage. And we think about those things like, well, we got to do those things. But as Baptists, sometimes we have a hard time with that because we're like, well, we're not saved by works, but we're saved by faith. And so we focus on, well, as long as I have the right belief and I was dunked in some water and I did all those right things and I thought the right things and I answered the right questions at Sunday school, everything's good. And that's true, but we're not talking about salvation in this passage. We're not talking about being, quote, right with God and having all the right answers. What we're talking about, what James is bringing to light in this passage, is now that you, quote, have the right answers or you have that belief, what are you doing? It's not a doubt of whether or not we have faith in the sense of that we believe in who God is and what he's done and what he's going to do what he says he's going to do, and that we are going through the right motions and have the right answers for Sunday school and read our scripture and all those kind of things. It's not that those things are bad, because they're not. They're just incomplete. There's a certain level of, like, if we truly understand that God is the God of love and through Jesus he has given us hope and purpose and a reason to live and to show that, there's a certain life that comes from that. If we really believe that God can change lives, then we participate in changing lives. That's what he's trying to say. It's not that doing something earns something from God. That is not the point of this passage. That was the trouble that Martin Luther had in that time. But even Martin Luther later would talk about how, even though he, you know, if you didn't know this, Martin Luther, leader of the Reformation, he didn't want this book in the Bible anymore because he had a problem with it. A lot of that had to do with the sacrament stuff that was going on in that day. But really, the issue that he had was that it was people, how they read James and how they preached about James, that it was about doing these things in order to earn something from God. That's not what James is talking about. He's not saying you do these things to earn something, that you fix the microwave, okay? He's talking about if there is that belief, there is that hope, there is that gift of grace in our lives, it changes us and it changes those that we're around. It means something in our lives. So the robocalls. You're wondering how I was going to bring that back around. That lady didn't have any clue about me. And so now, you know, when telemarketer calls started, people probably picked up and answered and would have a conversation with somebody. Oh, you actually have something that could help me. You know, those kinds of things. Now, because they are so empty and lacking in connection or relationship, they become really words that hit a brick wall. And most of us, as soon as we see that scam thing on our phone, thank goodness they have that now, okay, we just deny it. Or the moment they start into their thing about their extended warranty, we deny it. Can I be gut level honest? The world is doing that to Christians because we've had empty words. We've said a lot of things and our actions have not participated in them. We have come up with solutions and fixes for groups of people and for people without actually getting to know them. Without actually getting to see where they are, we said, hey, go be warm and have a nice meal without ever offering them clothing and a meal. We've jumped in to offer a solution to make people come into our way of thinking and our ideas before ever understanding where they came from. What underlying things are going on in their life? What needs they have? We just jump to an assumption. A solution that is empty. A solution that, quite frankly, is selfish. I mean, if we really think about it, if my whole goal is to help someone just so that I get something out of it, rather than to see what's best for them, selfish. James then continues, and he offers two interesting correlations from the Old Testament. Never would you really think that a patriarch of the Hebrew people and a prostitute would be put in the same category. Would you? Like, I mean, I'm hoping I'm not the only one that's thinking this. Like, normally those two don't get put in the same category, right? But he makes reference to Abraham and Rahab. And his point is not to point out what they've done in the past. Both of them had past. I mean, let's be honest. Let's not gloss over Abraham's misjudgments and bad decisions, okay? He had a few. Can we be honest, okay? But his point in referencing these two is their actions when brought forth with opportunity. See, Abraham, while he made bad decisions, he eventually had the opportunity to put his faith in action. And he ended on a good note. He really did, okay? Rahab ends up being the ancestor to David, but she helped a group of people that she really didn't have a reason to help. Really, at the time, did not really have a whole lot of things to gain from it, but she saw something in them, an opportunity to show love and grace to them through that opportunity. You see, as Christians, as followers of Jesus, that is, well, to put it, I don't know how else to put it, that is our opportunity. That is what we are to be about. Those are the things we are to be looking for. Yes, we all may have jobs and obligations and different things to do, but ultimately, our ministry, it's not just Todd now, it's Brad too, okay? Y'all tell him that. It's not, I don't play games with him. But anyway, but like the whole idea here is it's not just about what we think we have to do to make a living, or only ministers or pastors have this opportunity to put those in action. No, ministry is all of us. Ministry and showing the love of God is all of us. Yes, it is great to take that time in Bible study and to learn about those answers and to have those truths and those things that we wrestle with and those that scripture that we have memorized or put into our hearts, and all that stuff is great. Please continue to do that. Please come to Sunday school. Please be a part of those kinds of things in Bible study. But don't stop there. We can't stop there. Jesus did not stop there. The disciples didn't stop there. If you read through the book of Acts, while they make some screw-ups, and they do some things that don't make a whole lot of sense in the book of Acts, we just went through that. The whole point was, is not just going and telling someone the truth, but showing it. Offering help. Doing the same thing Christoph did. I'm here. What do you need? I mean, really, if we want to, like, sum up a lot of Jesus' ministry, that statement's pretty darn good. I'm here now. God in flesh, the love of God right here in front of you. What do you need? And in the midst of all that, if we go back to the Gospels, Jesus takes that moment and he says, I'm here, what do you need? But then he tells the followers, you go do the same. You go be a part of the same thing. You go be deeds and faith together. Not one or the other, but one flows out of the other. The works of Jesus flowed out of his faith, his relationship, who he was. The same thing goes for us. Our works, our deeds, the things we do, living justly, loving kindness, those kinds of things, the things we're to be about, flow out of our faith. It's not one or the other. That's the challenge. So as a lifeless body is dead, so faith without actions is dead. In other words, you still see the remnants of faith, but it has no activity. He refers to it as a lifeless body. In other words, it has no action, it has no life, it has no growth, it has no activity. Faith should have activity. It's not just believing in what God said and what he says we are and what he's going to do, but it's participating in that very thing. What is belief if not a reason for action? I don't know. That's probably a quote from somewhere. I don't know. I don't think I made it up. But in all seriousness, what is belief? What is faith without action? As James said, it's a lifeless body. It has no life. It is not alive. It has no purpose. It has no activity. So that's the thing. Let's quit treating people like microwaves. Let's quit ignoring groups of people because they won't fit our mold of solution. But rather, let's meet people where they are, find out what they need, participate in showing them love and grace, and live out and be active faith people. Active faith people. So the question is, what opportunities do you have in your life? You may have different ones than me. Actually, I know you probably have different ones than me. You are living your life in your situation for the opportunity to show people the love of God. Where's that opportunity? I have that same. So as a church, as a community, as individuals, what are we doing to live out faith? To make it active.